T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
The ACC, the Big 8, the Big 12, and the SEC are still planning to go ahead for now. But I don't know if that's sustainable unless they're getting either much better numbers than everybody else is at a time when all the reports are that they're not, or that they don't care, that the money is simply too large for them to walk away from. And the ACC surprises me some, because other than Clemson and sometimes Miami, it's not really a football conference.
Yeah, I don't understand how these other conferences think they're going to do this. If anything, they're in worse shape, many of them, where their schools are located, than the places that have already called off their season. So it doesn't seem to be attached to anything, any real logic. It's attached merely to who is going to be most stubborn about inevitably giving up the money that they're used to getting on a year-to-year basis. Because that, you know, like every other single person in this country, that's what we're dealing with right now. None of us have what we had last year or the year before that or any year of our lives before. This, everything is different now, and college football is going to have to accept that. It's fascinating to me that the Power Five conferences did not do this together.
It just shows you what happens when there's no central leadership, and you basically have five. It's almost like we got to go Game of Thrones here. It's almost like Westeros, and you have all these warring factions and regions in this fictitious country called college football. And, you know, these two have an alliance. These other three are sort of acting independently. And when you have independent operation in the name of trying to make more money than the next guy, when you need to reach consensus in a moment like this, you are going to have different priorities, different sets of facts being worked from, different doctors relaying incredibly different messages to the conference. Whom to believe, who to believe, what to believe, I don't even know anymore. I've been so turned around on how I feel about this. I think, of course, they cancel college football. That's the right and smart thing to do. And then I also consider, well, having a daily amount of testing is also a thing that would maybe provide some clarity to these kids instead of just wondering. I don't know what the right decision is, but I do know that Dr. Cameron Wolf, who is a Duke infectious disease specialist, is saying things like, you know, saying that, you know, is it perfect? No. Will it be expensive and hard and lots of work? For sure. But I do believe that you can sufficiently mitigate the risk of bringing COVID into the football field or into the training room at this level. And that's no different than living as a student on campus. And I you know, meanwhile, Pac-12 and Big Ten doctors apparently are looking at, you know, heart echoes that suggest, well, you know, your heart might explode. Obviously, I'm exaggerating a little bit, but there is an awful lot more concern being paid just on surface level. If we really wanted to make this about science and evidence and that sort of thing, there seems to be in the Big Ten and the Pac-12 a much bigger concern for unknown, you know, heart conditions in the future than there seem to be in other conferences. And now this is a matter for the lawyers and liability to really come into play. And whatever lawyers threatening whatever liability to the Big Ten and the Pac-12, you'd figure eventually those memos hit the president's desks in the SEC, the ACC, the Big 12 as well. What the presidents then do, we don't know. But look, a year from now, If you told me college football would put the pieces back together and look like the sport we all grew up with, or there was, based on this being the why or the fork in the road, the start of a collegiate football civil war that leaves us redrawing boundaries and battle lines a year from now, I don't know what I would believe, fellas. This is an experiment that will be run in real time that no one really understands the outcome of.
I don't think it'll be civil war, and here's why. I think this is basically on the assumption that the SEC is going to do this because they're the ones that are going to move the other two conferences. If the SEC does this, they're basically saying, we're not involved with you anymore. We'll do this ourselves. And if the ACC signs on with the ACC, they've got natural playing partners. If the Big 12 opts in too, then they'll just say, we're a group of three. And if the NCAA isn't part of this, then the NCAA isn't part of it. I mean, the NCAA has never had any power in this anyway. And the conferences wanted it that way. And now what we're getting is the basic difference philosophically between schools and conferences that regard their players as collateral damage for the money machine and those that don't. The Big Ten is basically saying, when we come back, fans will come back. The SEC is saying, oh, no, we're never leaving a dollar on the table. We're never leaving a dollar on the table at all, period. That's the deal.
Well, you know, I kept on saying that it was a matter of take the punch. The Big Ten and the Pac-12 today, at least temporarily, duck the punch of COVID-19 while three other major conferences seem to still be making a date with that boxing glove. What the ramifications are, we do not know. We do not know. You can only hope for the best, but you know, if the Big Ten is right or wrong, it only costs money. If other conferences are wrong, who knows what that bill might actually entail in terms of health, careers, futures. We do not know. We do not understand. It's a fascinating afternoon of headlines. And we got some really great guests to talk about this with today. Roxy Bernstein, who you all know, gosh, he was in for me last week, does an awful lot of play-by-play of college football. You can hear him, Pac-12 Network, ESPN, so on and so forth. We love Roxy. We're going to talk to him a little bit later on today, see what he thinks of all this. We are going to talk with a gentleman who I doubt you've ever heard much of, but what an interesting conversation we will have later this hour with a gentleman named Tom Chattel of the Omaha World Herald. This is the guy that Ray Ratto tabbed to talk about Nebraska. Now, I know a lot of you aren't big Nebraska Cornhusker fans, but if Nebraska really is to go rogue, what does that mean? What would that entail? Walking away from the Big Ten, it's fascinating. Like, how do you put that toothpaste back in the tube if Nebraska goes for that squeeze? Fascinating stuff. Tim Kirkjian will join us a little bit later on because we have two very different baseball games to kind of talk about from last night. We've also got some really good NBA bubble action to consider. We've got a little later on today, a Tuesday trifecta lovingly prepared for you. The Giants had to rally late after spending most of their night getting no hit in Houston. Alex Cintron hit with a 20-game suspension. Ramon Laureano, a 6-game suspension. I'm sure appeals will be coming. Last night, the Angels stopped the 9-game winning streak from the A's, but what a show that an all-time great and a soon-to-be great, right now a current very good. Matt Chapman had a week in about 4 innings last night, and Mike Trout is about as special as baseball players come. What a fascinating couple of games we had last night. What a fascinating day of headlines from the world of college football. The ripple effects won't be understood, measured, or known for a very, very long time. It is all fascinating, and people feel very raw about this. This is a very real moment. We're watching politics circle their wagons around this issue, and oh boy, what an interesting Tuesday we've got for you today. Damon Ratto and Kolsky, and we're brought to you by Chilton Auto Body. Open to serve the Bay Area with contact-free auto body repair options, along with free pickup and delivery. Chilton Auto Body now delivers virtual estimates and curbside contact-free service from the comfort of your vehicle. Book an appointment today at ChiltonAutoBody.com. An unbelievable day of headlines. A great show set up for you today. We look forward to you being a part of it. 888-957-9570. Where were you when you heard college football broke from a sense of normalcy than you've ever known? Like, this is a through the looking glass moment for college football and sports in general. What an afternoon. 888-957-9570. Damon Ratto and Kolsky on 95.7 The Game.
Damon Ratto and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
I think one of the apparent things, at least it's how I feel about this, maybe it's Ray, Matt, how you guys feel. This is embarrassing. I mean, we are supposed to be the most powerful, the most got-it-together nation in the world, and we couldn't wrap our arms around an issue over the course of 5 months that had just simple steps been taken, agreed to, had the most minimal of sacrifices you'll ever be asked to make in your life in terms of just wearing a mask for consideration when you go outside. Had this happened, I do not know if we are here right now with the Big Ten and the Pac-12 both agreeing today to punt on the college football season. It is a sign of fragility that really defines us, I think, more than any strength or any hope that you might have. Hoping this would go away got us in the position we're all living in today. Hope is your enemy right now. Action by adults is what was truly needed.
Well, this was basically a series of acts where you had to choose between the long-term viability of the thing you're trying to do and the short-term dollars. The fact is, everybody's going to lose a ton of money on this. That's a given. The question is how you want to do it and what you want to prioritize, given that basic reality. Because the SEC's day is coming too. It's just a matter of how it's going to happen to them. And I'm assuming here that the SEC is going to keep playing, because there's no indication that they're not.
So when you say the day's coming, what do you mean? A day of reckoning?
I mean, at some point, the kids are going to get sick, they're going to sue universities, and they're going to collect big time. They're going to end up losing money, and they're going to end up having to lay people off. It's the same specter that the Big Ten and the Pac-12 are looking at. It's just, what do you want to prioritize, given the fact that either way you're going to lose money? Do you want to just say, we want to keep the engine moving just because we want the engine to move? Or do we want to take a longer view? And that's the most pragmatic and cynical way to look at it. The basic way to look at it is, I don't want to give young people heart disease. The Big Ten and the Pac-12 made their choices on the assumption that they'll get their money back in time. But this is about a shared burden and a shared responsibility. And if they are the only two conferences to do that, the other three will get theirs when it's time to get theirs.
Yeah, I do. So there's a couple things here. Obviously, I think if we were certain that everyone who got coronavirus would have lasting cardiovascular issues, debilitating cardiovascular issues, this would be an easy decision, even for the SEC, because there's a level of liability they're obviously not willing to risk. But what they've shown us here is that clearly that's all this is about, is liability. And right now they feel they can survive it. Because if this had anything to do with the concern of the well-being of kids, you know, we're being sold this idea of, well, for a lot of these kids, it's better to be on campus playing football and getting tested than it is to be at home in the environments that they come from. They're more likely to get sick there. I'm tempted to think that's sincere, because there is a real point in there But it's immediately exposed as insincere when you don't cancel football now. Because let me just ask, Damon, Ray, as fathers, what is the acceptable percentage risk of one of your children having lasting heart disease?
As close to zero as possible.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like I'm doing the math, but that's an easy answer for sure. Yeah. And by
right?
the way, I'm Mr. Go ahead and let my kid play football. Like, concussions,
yeah.
That's part of growing up. That's just good times as far as I'm concerned. That's just part of it. The vast majority of people who have ever played football are fine and dandy and happier for it. But
yeah, so if there's a 5% chance of lasting heart disease, none of us would let our kids do that. So if you had any care for the kids, you're not doing this right now, period. You can't.
But
not with the little we know.
But don't we risk, like you are mathematically, in terms of micromorts, which is a way to measure your chances of dying in 1,000, you are mathematically in more trouble riding your bike to the grocery store than you are of, you know, diseases. Like, there's a 5% chance that you are going to die today pretty much anyways. Like, 95% chance you're not going to. Like, the everything is perfect for your the totally safe environment that we're now longing for never truly existed in the first place. So where's the give and take?
It's not like you're moving risk from one category to another. You're increasing risk with this.
Right.
And secondly, if all the coaches and all the athletic directors who wanted to continue football but couldn't were faced with a choice, why is the choice not, why don't you guys stay on campus here, but we don't play football? We'll give you the tests. We'll take care of you. You'll be in the safe environment, but you won't be doing the unsafe thing. It's because they consider that the safety of their players is fungible. It's that they're saying there's a cost for you being safe, and it's to make sure that the economic engine of football keeps churning. We're not going to take care of you for free. You have to prove to us that you're worth taking care of. That's the disturbing thing.
Yeah, and to your original point, Damon, I think part of the problem here is that we're living in what is ultimately a failed state. Because ideally, we'd have a healthcare system that would take care of 18 to 21-year-old kids when they're at home from college if they don't have the resources to do it themselves, if their parents don't have the resources or whoever. That like, the problem here is communities all over the country are unsafe because nationally this was not handled properly. And we're all at some level of risk. You're right to say that. But if you play college football, then every kid in the conference is at the same level of risk as the least careful kid in the conference. And you're talking about like 1,000 kids per conference. And pretty much all of those 1,000 are ultimately going to be exposed to the least careful among them. And that to me seems like a huge increased risk.
The ripple effect of this, you know, what would college football mean? Well, maybe this campus over here is saying absolutely no students, no one in the stadium, while this campus over here is saying we'll let 25,000 people in because we think we can do that carefully and correctly. And there isn't an across-the-board standard, which is what happens when you don't have centralized leadership and everyone is fighting for their own group of rules and house rules. The amazing thing that I think this does, and they want to keep on saying that it would be safer for kids, student-athletes, to come and play, but I don't know if it's safer for all the kids on campus who are now getting together, packed tightly in dorm rooms and in sports bars to watch the game. I mean, that's what happens. I'm going to tell you that every single Saturday I ever spent during college football season, I was either in a stadium, in a dorm room, in somebody's apartment, 12 dudes deep, or at a sports bar watching college football. It is the number one thing that gathers dudes in the daytime on a college campus. So even though we will never look at the number of COVID lives or the amount of COVID that won't be spread just because we're not getting together in sports bars. And you don't have that fear of missing out with your friends if you don't go to that party, because today, you know, even though there's no one allowed in the stadium, that's still our rival, and it's a bucket game, so I'm going to be there. It's the ripple effects of all this are fascinating, and to get back to your point, and I know that I argued against it, I'm not disagreeing with you in any way, shape, or form, Matt, and you know that, and Ray, you know that, and I think most of our audience knows that. What we do not know is where the disease goes. Like today, all sorts of heart issues are being put on the table for the first time by doctors who, you know, are supposed to be reputable and respected. And this is an issue. I saw that Nicole Auerbach in The Athletic is reporting that, according to a high-ranking Big Ten source, the conference is already aware of at least 10 players who have myocarditis,
myocarditis.
Thank you very much. Hold the mayo. An alarmingly high number of otherwise rare conditions. I mean, so this isn't something that is just theoretically maybe a danger zone. It's happening in real time, and that's why I think you're looking at the extreme decision being reached today. And that kind of answers the question. Maybe I'm asking the both of you, why today? Why did we have to reach event horizon on August 11th? It feels like you can unplug or not play a game right up to the moment of kickoff. Like, look how close they came to tipping off that night in the NBA, and then they didn't.
My
Why
guess,
not give yourself a little bit more runway?
My guess. Oh, go ahead.
No, please.
Arm wrestle
I
over
insist.
My guess is that it's nothing more complicated than behind the scenes someone got sick in a way that shook them up. I mean, we've had plenty of reported cases from all the schools, but I would guess that someone got sick within whatever training camp that thought it was creating a bubble, and then four other guys on the team got sick, and they quickly realized that this would break down exceptionally quickly, and it would be better to avoid embarrassment now.
Yeah, I mean, there have been, you know, enough reported cases in enough places that that this is not just the 10 people that Nicole Auerbach reported on. I've seen numbers that are significantly higher and across a bunch of other schools. And it really boils down to whether people in a position of decision-making are willing to antagonize their donor base for a little while to protect kids, or they're willing to take care of their donor base, you know, hoping that this won't decimate their schools and they can get whatever advantages come from not canceling any football games. I mean, there's a pragmatism that is short term and a pragmatism that is long term. And the long term choice was what the Big Ten and Pac-12 did. The short term choice, which I guess is still being made because I haven't announced yet, is the ACC, the SEC, and the Big 12. And the reason why I think the Big Ten and the Pac-12 announced it now rather than waiting, I think they came to the conclusion that things are not going to change quickly enough within the next month and a half to just delay this until October or even November, because at some point, 2021 starts running into you, and you can't just keep crushing football games into a smaller and smaller space. And I mean, there Barry Alvarez, who's the AD at Wisconsin, was on a Zoom call today with reporters and said that he had talked to his head football coach, Paul Christ, about, well, we may play early in the spring. We might only play 6 to 8 games and then have a full schedule come fall of 2021. So, but I think basically the two conferences that announced today decided that they had run out of time for alternative plans other than this, because it not only was football, it was all the other sports, and that includes essentially most non-conference basketball.
One of the big stories coming out of this was just a day ago, you had a few Big Ten universities saying, hey, if the Big Ten pulls the plug on the season, we're going to look to play in another conference. Chief among them is Nebraska, who, by the way, is a shell of itself since joining the Big Ten. So, like, Nebraska isn't quite who it used to be, but they're taking this opportunity to throw the muscle around. I know not a lot of you care much about Nebraska, but this is a fascinating part of the story. Can you imagine if a team in the Pac-12 was like, well, forget it then. We're going to join the Big 12. Like, Cal is, you know, saying, hey, we're going to play, go play football. Screw you guys. What are the grounds for that to happen? Is that more than just temporary bluster? Is it real? A gentleman named Tom Chattel is going to be joining us. He's a sports columnist at the Oklahoma World Herald. And we're going to just check in with him for a couple of quick minutes to find out what exactly is going on in Lincoln. And can that actually happen? It feels like if lawyers wanted to show up and prevent that from happening, they would they'd be sharpening their pencils right now. And I'm sure that they are. This is Kearney in Oakland giving us a call, 888-957-9570. Kearney in Oakland, you're on 95.7 The Game.
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you for having this conversation. I'm very excited. So there's a lot of points, but the one thing that I'd like to just say is that there are so many young folks that are playing sports and allowing, now I'm not saying I'm for them playing or not for them playing, I'm opening another scope of this, and that is there are so many young people that are playing sports, and that them playing sports is their only quote-unquote ticket to the type of future that they want to have. And unfortunately, the demographic that is at higher risk of contracting the virus is also the demographic that actually really needs this ticket. So I understand that in efforts of hopefully not losing the ticket for their future, the need and the desire to play. Because when you ask if you would want your child to have some long-term heart disabilities impairment, the reality is when we're looking at the population that is generally affected heavily by this disease, they probably have the genetics for that anyway.
Well, look, I mean, there is no element of COVID-19 which hasn't harder hit minority, lower income families. I mean, there is no direction where that group doesn't get the short end of the stick, including this. And you're right. The opportunity, the leg up, the chance to be on scholarship for an athlete is an extraordinary step in life that might not be extended quite the way it used to be. But no one got their scholarship pulled today. There is that. No one who was on full scholarship at a Big Ten or a Pac-12 school is today not on scholarship. So no one's been denied an education yet.
And I think that's why we've talked about on this show the idea that no one is stopping them from taking care of these kids that they supposedly care about. We're hoping they don't play football and, again, expose each and every one of them to the decisions of the least careful among the entire conference. I would not like to see that happen. I'd love to see them continue to educate and maybe even house and or feed the athletes that they do that for under normal circumstances, if that's safe, right? So, you know, that is something that I think should be incumbent upon these universities that essentially take kids into their care when they offer them scholarships because of all the money that they'll make for them on the football field. But, you know, that we shouldn't be forcing them to play to earn that at this moment in time. They should be provided that.
More to the point, and I'm just adding on to yours because you've basically said it. Football is different than any other form of campus life because you are basically running into other strangers. You're spitting on them. They're spitting on you. There's a lot of sort of sweat gets exchanged. There's a lot of things that go on in football that don't go on in most other forms of sanctioned campus life. You can live as dangerously as you want, but there should not be a requirement that your safety as a member of the university requires you to take on more risk. And if they did care about the students, they would let them be students. I mean, what unless they're just going to say, and this is the thing that scares them to death, no, you work for the university. And if they work for the university, that means they're employees, and that means they are entitled, given the number of hours they put into this a week, to have health benefits, which include taking care of COVID.
Might that have an awful lot to do with the Big Ten and the Pac-12 looking to punt on this? You know, the bean counters have looked at this on a level that no one has publicly admitted yet, saying that we are getting closer and closer to unionization of student athletes. And if we can delay that for 12 more months, we'll be better prepared to come back and deal with it a few more months from now, when hopefully the pandemic isn't sitting up there on the same, you know, we're worried about a pandemic and we're worried about losing our entire financial structure as we know it. Like, that's an awful lot for one day. Maybe they're punting knowing that they can. It's a lot easier to deal with a frickin' pandemic than it is an entire workforce that used to be free labor that now wants to be paid.
Oh, no, there's nothing about this that doesn't have a cynical base to it. But given the choice between cynicism and cynicism, I think I'll take the cynicism that doesn't give you heart disease.
Yeah, I mean, is this just as simple as whose lawyers are most or least risk averse?
There's different risks. That's the point. There's the different levels of risk, and that's what the lawyers are there to figure out. The lawyers at the Big Ten and the Pac-12 said we could lose our shirts on liability. The SEC, the ACC, and the Big 12, who haven't acted yet, but if they do as expected and decide to play football, are saying we'll make money this year, we'll pocket it, and then we'll deal with the other problem when the other problem becomes a problem. So now, how they're going to do this if they don't have people in the stands is interesting. But they may get around that too, and you say, all right, we'll only half fill the building. Or maybe we'll only fill it three quarters. You know, there are a bunch of different ways you can dance around this. And they have people on full-time retainer figuring that out. But so, for the moment, yeah, go ahead.
Well, I wonder, when you say if, as expected, they play, is that just because you expect them to play? Or has there been reporting around they are definitely still intending to play? Because the last thing I feel like we really heard before the Big Ten and Pac-12 canceling was the Power Five are kind of putting their heads together and considering canceling or postponing. And then all of a sudden, they're breaking out into individual conferences. So do we know anything about where those other conferences' heads are at, so to speak?
It's the reporting that I've seen, and that basically the SEC is willing to be the last one to walk away. But the ACC, the Big 12 has never given a hint what it's planning to do. They've sort of been a wild card. But given the fact that the Big 10 and Pac-12 acted away from the rest of the group may mean that they said, God, we're going to be stuck making a choice we don't want to have made for us by other people. And they may have just decided to bolt on their own. I have not seen anybody say for sure that the SEC, the ACC, and the Big 12 are going to play. But that is the sort of best guesstimates that I'm seeing from people who have been covering this from the get.
Okay.
Today, the Big 10 and the Pac-12 punted. The SEC, ACC, and the Big 12 are considering running a play here on fourth down. We will find out what they actually do here, see if they can bring up another down and distance. Somebody on Twitter, very, very angry, saying that they hope we all get fired and that we are pathetic and you're not going to tell me what to do. Keep spreading fear. We're not telling you what to do. You do whatever you want. We're telling you today that two major conferences that end up in the Rose Bowl every year said, we don't think this is safe. If that makes you mad at us, you go right ahead. You seem very reasonable. We are just reporting the decision made independently of this radio program. We have not influenced this decision in any way, shape, or form. Well, I mean, clearly both Cal and Stanford listen to every word we say. But beyond that, that's only two schools. There's many more deciding, let's not do this. And there are still many more who are deciding, let's do it. Nebraska was told by the Big Ten, you're not playing. Nebraska's saying, wait a minute, we might want to play. We don't talk Nebraska very much here. Why would we? We're not in Nebraska. We are not. The last time I checked, this is not Nebraska. But this is a fascinating story, and the man who covers the Nebraska Cornhuskers, Tom Chattel of the Oklahoma World Herald, is going to join us quickly to just, we want to ask him, what are their options? Do they have options, or is this bluster? What in God's name is going on? A day of gargantuan headlines from the world of college football, and then we will get into the A's winning streak coming to an end in a pinball game last night down in Anaheim, and the Giants are probably going to commit two errors in batting practice today. Like, that's who they are. So don't you move. We got an awful lot for you this afternoon, including, well, an interview that you're not going to hear anywhere else, but I think it's going to be fascinating. Stick around. We're going to get into that next here on 95.7 The Game, brought to you by Fremont Bank, full-service banking, no compromises.
Damon Ratto and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
I mean, maybe the biggest day of sports news in terms of what got canceled since we found out the Summer Olympics got postponed by a year. Today, the Big Ten and the Pac-12 have decided that they are punting on fall sports. College football, obviously, the focus of this conversation. And what is stunning is that, you know, it's not a consensus across the Power Five. We've got two of the five, with the other three very much still looking like they want to and will try to play. And in the Big Ten, which Nebraska just joined about 5 minutes ago, they're saying they'd like to maybe get out of the conference now. And I don't know if this is bluster or something that is really going on. It's a fascinating development and part of the ripple of this story, which affects an awful lot of sports fans out there. So to learn more about this from a guy who knows the program like the back of his own hand, from the Omaha World Herald, Tom Chattel is good enough to join us here. Damon Ratto and Kolsky. Tom, thank you for joining us on a very busy day. How are you?
Good. It's good to be with you, gentlemen, and Ray.
Thank you. You obviously
okay,
know
we want to start that way then, do we? Because this will
turn ugly. Ray, I just can't help it. I kid because I love.
It's too late. This is going to be bad for you.
Tom, obviously you and Ray have an awful lot to sort out, so I just have one question for you, and then I'm going to get the hell out of the way to preserve my own career and safety. Is Nebraska full of thunder and bluster here, or are they really looking to go rogue on their own conference?
You know, it's funny that these things sort of pick up on their own in the world of Twitter. I mean, it seems like, to my knowledge, Nebraska has not come out and said we want to leave. But boy, the signals are loud and clear, and they keep saying we want to keep playing games, while as other Big Ten schools are falling in line like good little Big Ten soldiers. You know, and but the interesting thing is not only Nebraska has gone rogue a little bit, but Ohio State, which is they're the flagship school in the Big Ten, sort of like USC in the Pac-12. It's like for Ohio State to say we also want to go play our smoke games. That's pretty incredible. I think everybody right now is testing the new commissioner, and boy, he sure failed the test today. That press conference he gave, interview on the Big Ten Network. Not sure if you heard it. The interviewer is Dave Revson. Did a great job asking good questions, and he didn't answer one of them. So maybe he's auditioning to be NFL commissioner. I'm not sure.
The conspiracy freaks and tinfoil hat brigade have sort of reminded us that sort of Nebraska has not really made many competitive inroads in in the Big Ten, and the obvious question is, if they decided to go rogue, would the Big 12 let them back in? But more to the point, can they do that without basically a place to practice, and TV money. Because if they decided to leave the Big Ten, the Big 12 hasn't accepted them yet, so they don't have to cut them in for anything. Could they fiscally afford to do this?
Yeah, this would be – the timing of this is terrible because they're about to lose $80 million by not having football this fall. So, yeah, you can't cut yourself out of any TV deals in the next 2 years. That's bad. The Big 12 would have to immediately, give them something. And then the Big 12 money isn't anywhere near the Big 10 money. But it's fair to remember that back in 2010, Nebraska was not running toward the Big 10. They were running away from the Big 12 and the chaos that was that league back then. And, you almost had Texas in the Pac-12. I mean, it was crazy. Everybody thought it was falling apart. The Big Ten offered, and Nebraska accepted, but it hasn't been a great fit. Nebraska is actually probably a better fit in the SEC. They love football here, and they want to win, and they're all about football. Yes, academics are certainly the people on that side of the campus will tell you they're important, but the Big Ten is all about academics. It's all about bluster, arrogance. It's all about wearing the Big Ten blazer and saying, by God, you're in the Big Ten. And it's not really a Nebraska thing. So as a San Diego kid, I was actually hoping for Nebraska to go west, but that wasn't going to happen. But I don't know how this happens quickly. I just think it may not happen at all. I just think it's the way Nebraska is carrying themselves right now. That they're clearly defiant of the Big Ten, which Big Ten schools don't do. You can't be out of order. So if they stay, and I think they will for now, it'll be awkward. And let's be honest, Nebraska hasn't really done much in the Big Ten yet. They're right now, they've got the right head coach, but they're still building. It is a hard league to build in. So there's going to be a lot of interesting times ahead, and unfortunately, a lot of time this fall to talk about it.
To that point, do you think even if they don't do it now because they can't pull it off fast enough, this ends up being the sort of inciting incident that leads them out of the Big Ten in the next, say, 3 years?
Well, that's what I'm going to write for tomorrow. And that's sort of my take on this now is, I mean, this seems real. It seems like the kind of thing that it could really lead somewhere. And, it's Scott Frost's not a Big Ten. He played in the old Big Eight, and then of course he was in Oregon, but he has no ties to the Big Ten, and his offense is actually more equipped to work in the Big 12 or the Pac 12. So he's all for it, I believe. I've never really sat down and talked to him about this stuff, but I have a feeling we will.
Tom Chattel of the Omaha World Herald. all these old Big Eight teams. I say Oklahoma by accident. I'll say this: I went to Indiana, which is a doormat in Big Ten football. But since adding Nebraska, the Big Ten has added one hell of a women's volleyball team. You know what I mean? Like, Nebraska ain't who it used to be. Not even close. I can't think of a national powerhouse that has lost more prestige in the last 20 years than Nebraska. I mean, maybe Miami, but Nebraska was a lot more entrenched than Miami. So careful what you ask for, because in the SEC, you guys get blown up by Missouri all of a sudden now. You know what I mean?
Right. And that's my school, by the way. So
MIZ.
Unfortunately, Missouri doesn't do that often enough. But, yes, that's true. Nebraska has put on a clinic in mismanagement and how to dismantle a dynasty. I mean, all dynasties hit the wall at some point. You know, you look around, you know, USC certainly happened to them. But, you know, it's about who you hire. And Oklahoma hired Bob Stoops, and bam, they came right back.
Yeah.
Nebraska's never hired that guy. The best was they hired the old Oakland Raiders coach, Bill Callahan.
It didn't work out very well. Tom, thank you very much for joining us on a really busy day. We appreciate your perspective. What an interesting afternoon this has turned out to be. Tom Chattel of the Omaha World Herald here on 95.7 The Game, and welcome to your 3 o'clock hour.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.